And you can't do it. Second and 10 at the 39. And the handoff to William Perry playing in the backfield with a minute to go. William the Refrigerator Perry carried the ball.
I think that might be a message to the Angus formation from last year in the NFC Championship game.
When
Bill Walsh put Guy McIntyre back in the backfield.
And the clock runs down. The Chicago Bears go 6-0 for the first time since 1942.
Less than 3 yards to carry, and this was the number two rushing offense coming into today's game.
Three wide receivers set. Beasley in motion. And Garcia's pass is bobbled by Owens. Intercepted Mike Brown. Mike Brown into the end zone. Wins it in overtime for the Bears.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. It's time to remember this crap. And as always, Mike Donahue is here, and tonight we're going to remember some 49er bear crap. And there's a surprising amount of it. More than you'd think.
Yeah, more than it goes beyond just the 1980s, which I, of course, we're both prepared to discuss. But there's a pretty... quantified history, voluminous.
They've played 67 times, excuse me, nice math, 67 times, which is a lot more. That includes three playoff games. Which didn't
three, okay.
So, didn't go so well.
0-3, I believe. They'll all come up, all in the 80s and 90s. The Niners, and I guess I never really considered this. They're not really a team that I had much knowledge of historically, other than I knew that they came over in 1955 from the AAFC. We talked about the Browns a few weeks ago. The Colts also came over. So they go back before the AFL, but they're not a charter franchise. And I just sort of assumed that there wasn't much history between them because I don't know, San Francisco's out west. But it turns out that, you know, in 1940 or 1950, when they joined the conference, the Chicago Bears were still pretty much west in the league. And so they were actually in the same division as the 49ers. So they would have faced each other twice a year beginning in 1950. But there's no, like, you know, my dad's, and he's been, you know, he's had tickets since 1957. He's been going to games since before then. Other than, let's say, Gale Sayers, both returning scoring six touchdowns in one game on a rainy afternoon at Wrigley Field, which is against the 49ers. And then on the flip side, Gale Sayers getting his knee shredded by San Francisco's Kermit Alexander?
Yeah, not Kermit Washington.
They got punched Rudy Tomjanovich in the face.
Yeah. Those fucking Kermits. Stay away from them. I know my podcast career improved when I started staying away from Kermit.
Started staying away from Mike Brown. You could have had your face shattered or your knee shredded.
Either
so
it's
probably a good thing. Yeah, so
the Bears and Niners played twice a year until 1966.
They were laying the groundwork for the merger. I believe that's when Atlanta and New Orleans joined the league. So there must have been some sort of a realignment, maybe even a little bit 5 years overdue since Dallas and Minnesota had also joined the NFL at that point. So I think in 66, the NFL, in preparation for the AFL-NFL merger, branched off because, you know, before then it was just two divisions, East and West. So I think they, however it worked out, had to have split up, didn't face the Bears twice a year.
Yes, it started in 1950. For some reason, they only played each other once in 51.
Okay.
But every other year, including 50, they played twice. Maybe got snowed.
Yeah. And not much.
Of interest. I don't know what happened.
Well, yeah, because the 50s, like, you know, for the Bears, there wasn't really they weren't bad, but there was the glow of their real dynasty kind of worn off. They did return to the title game in 56, but they really weren't doing much that decade, and the 49ers weren't either. So it was kind of like Bears Buccaneers in the 90s.
So do you have an idea of how close the series is?
I've kind of noticed the WLs, but that's only from the 50s and 60s. I would just have to say I'd reckon it's kind of even.
What would you say if I told you the total points scored were the Niners 1,490, the Bears 1,321?
170 point difference over, would you say, 65 games?
67.
Okay, yeah, over 2 points a game for every game. That's pretty significant, I would think.
However, the Niners lead the series 34-32-1.
Whoa, so, okay.
Close, about as close as you can get. That includes the Bears are on a win streak against the Niners. They've won one in a row.
Well, there you go. What's the do you have a first Niners game that you remember? Bears Niners game? Because I do, and it actually predates the Super Bowl era, believe it or not. Would it be the playoff? Would it be the pain of the 84?
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I don't know that I
NFC. So
maybe I'm sure it would have been a big deal, like the 81 game, right? Would have been a big deal in our house. Or maybe the probably not. Maybe the November 27th, 1983, is that yours?
Because no,
Joe Montana would have been playing quarterback, so Dad would have been very...
That's the thing. Montana was... I hated him because I didn't have any recollection. I wasn't watching Notre Dame in the 70s like my dad and my brothers were. You know, they're quite a bit older than me. So I think they always admired Montana even after he joined the league. I absolutely just... since I didn't have that connection, I absolutely hated him. But... oddly enough, the first game I remember is they played in 79, and the Niners were terrible. And I only remember this because for Christmas that year, I'd gotten a Bears, like a history book, and it had somehow managed to get the 79 season in. There's a big black and white photo pregame of Walter Payton side by side with noted San Francisco 49er legend O.J. Simpson.
Of course.
Yeah, that was the first, you know, and I think I'm pretty sure it was OJ's last season. Walter was pretty much elevated to being his, you know, his successor. I don't think anyone knew he was going to run down OJ and Jim Brown for the all-time rushing record, but that was still 5 years away. But Peyton was certainly at his peak in 79, and the Bears hung on for a one-point victory. Which would prove crucial as the Bears squeaked into the playoffs that season.
So now OJ would have been a hometown hero in San Francisco.
He was from the San Fran area.
Francisco, went to San Francisco Community College, transferred to USC.
Wow. Was he like one of the earliest JUCO players? I mean, was JUCO even a thing like in the 50s?
He only played there 1 year and then went to USC. Maybe he did it. Was freshman eligibility only basketball?
Great question. I know it was in basketball.
I'm probably talking my ass. I'm pretty sure he went to City College and then transferred, played at USC. Then he ran for 2,000 yards, and he was in first and 10 on HBO.
That's right, TD Parker, baby.
Flew through some airports, and I don't know if anybody knows what he's up to these days.
Just kind of disappeared.
One of my favorite Arrested Development jokes of all time, which is one of my favorite shows of all time.
Great show.
Was George Bluth is... he's wanted for a little light treason, and he decides he's going to make a run for it to Mexico. And he's in disguise, and he's trying to buy a used car so he can drive down there. And there's a guy trying to sell him a Ford, and he's like, well, I'll take this. And he's like, is this a Bronco? He's like, no. They rebranded after the whole OJ thing. Now it's called the Escape. Is just tremendous because that's exactly what they did.
That is a hell of a joke. That's awfully topical and observational on part of the writers. I didn't dive deep only to recall. I don't recall, since that was one of the half decade of when the Bears consistently had three-headed quarterback. Yeah, 28-27, I think, right? I just pulled it up. But was it a game in which is that actually called the Vince Fipsolini? Did all three of those quarterbacks play? No, it was Mike Phipps only in that
Phipps.
Game.
Phipps went the route. They let him throw 19 times.
Yep. Well, the Bears needed that one. And the Niners were terrible. They were 1-7 going into it, and I think they finished 1-15. I think that's what ushered in the Bill Walsh era. I think he was there the next year. Even with OJ at the end of his career. No, Walsh was their coach. Must have been his first year, but they went 2-14. So good. Huey says good.
They held Walter to 162 yards on 23 carries and 3 touchdowns. The juice, 9 carries for 29 yards.
Yeah, probably one of his final games. It's always nice to see Peyton just light it up. I mean, obviously, the odds are going to be in your favor. You pull up a game from his era. Where he scores. And you know what? Bob Thomas looks like he did not miss an extra point.
Hey,
so
rare.
Great all-around day there by the Bears.
Can you imagine Bob kicking today with the long extra point, missing them short? Oh, that was right on. He just didn't quite have the leg for the 33-yard extra point.
My thought is that Bob would have gotten his law degree even earlier with today's distance. So you mentioned the 81 game, and it's just funny. I can remember 79, but I don't offhand recall the Bears, Niners in 81, only to say the Bears were a last-place team in 81, and the Niners would win their first of 5 Super Bowls that season. So they turned it around pretty quick, having gone 2-14 when an eventual wild card Bears team beat them to, handling them at home somewhat, 28-17 score would indicate it wasn't a blowout, but that would have been San Francisco on the ascension early in the season, I see now.
21-17. Yeah, that would have been the great Neil Armstrong.
Correct. Yeah, it was Neil's last chance. Not looking good after 2 games. The Bears hung in there. Freddie Solomon, I noticed, catches another touchdown. He caught one in the 79 game. Although that was not from Joe Montana. And although Walter didn't cross the goal line, our good friend Robin Earl did. So
yeah, I only acknowledge the Roland Harper touchdowns.
Oh, I didn't see that.
No, I didn't. I don't know if he scored one. It's the only ones I acknowledge, other than Walter.
And Roland may still have been around in 81. So, from that point, the Niners, they go on. They beat Forrest Gregg's Bengals. We talked a little bit about that in the Super Bowl. Bears may have begun a couple of years later, and it's kind of interesting to look. If we're doing this chronologically, I'm enjoying where it's going because we just, we covered an uneven wild card team playing them and then a last place team playing them. By 83, the Niners were 2 years removed from a championship, and the Bears were 2 years away from their Super Bowl, and they really did turn things around about halfway through that 83 season. And I do kind of remember this game. It was not on a Monday night. That was in 88. But it was kind of like a Pat Hughes alert, like a turning point for the – if you're really going to get granular with the whole, rise and fall of the Super Bowl Bears and, like, where it really begins and whatnot, it really kind of coming out of the ashes. 83 was, the draft that yielded like so much talent with, Willie Gault and Covert and Tom Thayer, who came along later, and Richard Dent, and I think maybe even Mike Richardson. And I think Dent may have kind of started to turn it around in this game, kind of make a name for himself. It was a good sign. The Bears are on the rise because the Niners did not go back. They went to the Super Bowl the next season, but they were flummoxed. That was a good sign for the Bears.
The Bears they intercepted Joe Montana twice. They had 5 sacks, including one by Richard Dent. The others were Mike Hartenstein. Steve McMichael had 2, and Otis Wilson had 1. And the interceptions, both by Mikes. L.A. Mike Richardson intercepted one, and a rarity, because he actually caught the ball, Mike Singletary had an
interception. Ah, that's right.
He had famously terrible hands.
He did. Yeah, for a linebacker. You
know, that's just proof that Joe threw a very catchable ball.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, so that's the Bears beat Joe Montana for the first time. That was the year that the Bears kind of got knocked out by Green Bay, and then they knocked Green Bay out, but they were on course then. So the next time they would meet, the stakes would be a little bit higher. And that's a game that any Bears fan that would have been, you know, sentient then, of course, is going to readily recall, because you and I broke down the Bears-Redskins playoff game, which was just a thrill. It was a thrilling game. Kind of unexpected and just, you know, completely memorable. And so I, you know, you grow up and the Bears are just really not that good in spite of a couple wild card teams. They've been, you know, not that good for a long time. And then, you know, you get this little bit of an ascension, but, you know, you're not sure until they actually steal this game in RFK. And it's like, holy shit, we're one game away from the Super Bowl. It was just kind of, you know, for me at least, felt like kind of caught us a little bit off guard, even though the Cubs just a few months earlier put us a game within the World Series. You know, 84 was a very interesting, fun year, but yeah, so they had to go into Candlestick Park and face the Niners, who had won the Super Bowl 3 years earlier, and it's, you know, didn't really work out that well, but it's still part of the tapestry.
It was only 6-0 at halftime.
I remember that.
The Bears offense did nothing the entire game.
They did. Yeah. Steve Fuller's name has been mentioned, and he just enough right in the Washington game, you know, and didn't make any mistakes to help them advance. But
Are you saying this is bad? Steve Fuller, well, did he throw all the passes? No, because Walter attempted. Walter got sacked. Must have trick play gone awry, I guess.
Yeah.
Steve Fuller, 13 for 22 with an interception. He was sacked 9 times. And so he had net 37 yards passing in the NFC Championship game. I wonder if that's a record.
Wow.
Now, the Bears did run for 149 yards. Walter ran for 92. But the Niners gained 200 more yards than the Bears did.
Gary Fenton
intercepted Joe Montana twice.
Is that right? Goddamn right. I have forgotten about that, I have to admit. I might recall maybe one. I just, you know, I hadn't thought about it in years. I do remember you mentioned that it was a 6-0 game at halftime. So as frustrating as it wasn't over. And at halftime, Dan Marino was interviewed. And Marino, of course, earlier in the afternoon, had finished knocking off the Pittsburgh Steelers, who incidentally were the only team to have beaten the he'd beaten the Steelers in the championship game, and he was resting, and they asked him about, you know, who he would prefer to see, and he gave a shout out to his old college roommate Jimbo Covert. Said, yeah, I'd like to see the Bears come back. Jimbo's my guy.
We could kick their ass.
Probably because if even our weak-ass defense can stop that.
Jesus, have you seen their offense? It's terrible.
There was – I don't know if you can find this today, because I don't know how documented it would have been at the time, but I do recall there was chatter that in 84 that in spite of the lacerated kidney that we had discussed, which had hospitalized Jim McMahon for 2 weeks and, you know, could have conceivably killed him, that there was this sort of vague outside, you know, in a futuristic sense, Schwarber-esque chance that McMahon would be Schwarber able to play in the Super Bowl. That's right. Jeez. We will never know if McMahon could have been able to, you know, would have been able to have made that return after getting his kidney sliced in half.
If he'd have played, I'll bet they'd have won.
Certainly the Niners didn't have any problem disposing of the Dolphins 2 weeks after, you know, 38-16.
Oh, you mean he would have played in the Super Bowl? He wasn't coming back for the NFC Championship game.
That's what I mean. Like, little Stevie Fuller.
The kidney just needed 2 more weeks. He was just 2 weeks away.
It was being discussed.
I think it was close.
It was being discussed.
My ear is pink.
And especially that's all you're holding on to when they're losing 6-0 at halftime. You're like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, we're going to win this game, and then Jim McMahon's going to come back, and we're going to win the Super Bowl. I am sure that
– If we could only get through this game, yeah.
11-year-old me was –
Well, he did come back the next year, so it wasn't, you know, a career ender, but yeah.
Yeah, he came back in September, not January.
Well, the injury.
Months to heal after that.
We just recapped that whole game in '84. That was, what, 2 months earlier? No, it was in November. It was almost. So, yeah, about 2 months.
They should have gone with Greg Landry.
Right. The silver haired fox, Greg Landry. That's right. He was the backup quarterback. That would be great.
You think when they signed him, Ditka thought it was Tom Landry's kid? big fan of the old man. How old are you? Are you Tom Landry's dad?
I mean, really? Now it's like Ditka was like senile then. He certainly played against. Right? No, but would have played against Landry.
Senile, I think, not helping. Maybe, but he's always been a meathead.
True. Yeah. Well, you know, we've discussed it. Those of us around Chicago were certainly familiar with Greg Landry because he was the blitz quarterback.
So we all remember that the Bears went and got their ass kicked, and there's the NFL Films made sure to get the shot of Sweetness sitting. Oh, it's very similar to the shot from his last ever game where he's sitting on the bench. He's kind of sitting on top. He's like got his feet up on, because they're ready, because they're like, all right, next year when the Bears are good, we're going to go back to this shot about how upset he is in the championship game. Yeah, Sables are no dummies. They knew that was coming.
Nice.
But what else, of course, is this game remembered for?
Well, at the end of the Guy McIntyre, is that what you're going to go with? Yeah, that's about all that happened. You already mentioned Fensick's two picks. So, yeah, end of the game. And I don't know why. Like, did Bill Walsh, like, what bone would Bill Walsh have had to have picked with Ditka?
Bill Walsh was a dick.
Well, but he always, like, sort of.
He had this professorial thing about him, but he was an asshole.
Okay, when we were, you know, so I don't know where this fits in, but when we were, when I was doing a little bit of research on Paul Brown prior to doing the Browns game with the Bears, because Brown had also run the Bengals, his name had come up. And apparently Bill Walsh was supposed to be like the Bengals heir apparent when Brown was running the Bengals in the 70s. And I think Paul Brown had just his nose out of joint about Bill Walsh. And passed him over and just kind of, you know, and Walsh whined about it and left, blah, blah, blah. So that, there's like a, you know, in retrospect, it makes me admire Paul Brown for not giving that sniveling little shit a job. But you're right. Like Walsh is, and rightfully so, he's credited with innovation, offensive innovations that have, you know, obviously they've evolved since he brought them in. He did contribute to the game. But he was like a perfect coach for San Francisco. He was not a meatball. He was professorial, is what you said. He was almost, I mean, for football, he was borderline effete. He was like this esoteric, this sort of intellectual type of a coach. And, you know, obviously the writers in the Bay Area would eat it up. And he was successful, but that, you know, it was.
Well, he'd already.
Definitely. It drove us nuts.
He'd been at Stanford.
So around all of those,
I guess. And back to Stanford again later.
Right, and beat Notre Dame.
He had that aura of, I'm smarter than you, we're going to do it this way, whatever. But he was a hard ass. I mean, you don't, not a successful football coach without being, he could be a real hard ass. But yeah, for whatever reason, he decided in a game where it was over that they were going to show off their elephant package. And that was they moved their guard, Guy McIntyre, and played him at fullback. And just ran him into the Bears a couple of times.
Uh-huh. Which
really pissed off Mike Ditka. And it's the entire reason that the refrigerator was ever a thing.
Exactly. Somewhere in the hills of South Carolina at this moment, there's a young William Perry, who's
ordering entire pizzas for himself.
And probably not going to class, but nevertheless, unbeknownst to him, the actions of Bill Walsh that day would help propel him into the absolute national spotlight.
He went from being a colorful, good defensive tackle to a legend.
Right.
As long as they're pumping up the football in Chicago or Arlington Heights, he will never William Perry will never be forgotten.
No, the fridge, or as Johnny Morris would say, the refridge. Yeah, he was good, but he wasn't playing, remember, either, because Buddy Ryan had his nose out of joint about Perry to begin with, just because of his whole slovenly.
Famously called him a wasted draft pick.
Right. Yep. So, yeah, you're right. So, Mac, at the end of the game, because, yeah, the Niners pull away, and they're going to the Super Bowl, and we're, you know, this is the closest we've all come. And, of course, we've been kicked. It wasn't quite as bad of a kick to the nuts as the Cubs a few months earlier, but it's kind of weird that you grow up and nothing happens, and out of the blue, your two favorite teams and your two favorite sports come within a game of the championship. You know what we did in my house? My dad had a friend over. A friend had recently gotten divorced. A friend he grew up with on the north side, Our Lady of Lords Parish, that Mr. Wesselman comes over to watch the Bears game, you know, watching as if he joins the Donahue clan as we're watching the game. My dad's trying to cheer him up, and it doesn't work out. And when the game was over, we decided to put in the VHS, which we had purchased that January, and I recorded everything, game one of the three-month-old 1984 NLCS, to at least, you know, going on a high note after the Bears lost the Niners. But such as it was that the line had been drawn, the Bears, every time they'd face the Niners for the next few years, there's going to be something on the line. Unfortunately, the next time they would play would be in a, believe it or not, one of two December Monday night games in which the Bears would eventually go to the playoffs, but in which they also got humiliated by the Niners. First one was in 87, and second one was in 91. That's a Bears team that a lot of us thought was probably their best chance at another Super Bowl.
They played again.
After 85. Oh, I'm skipping right over it. Right. I skipped right over
it. This is famous for lots of reasons.
This is our favorite one. This is the one we're going to have to spend the most time on. My bad. Yes, the rematch. Skipped right over it, but that's all right, because it was just they were the 49ers 10 months after humiliating the Bears were basically an Atlanta statue in the path of General Sherman, and it was very fucking rewarding. That game, 26-10. I don't even have to look it up. That was the final, right? I want to know, Andy,
the only touchdown
how many times
that the Niners scored was on defense.
Okay, I want to know how many times Montana was sacked, because I think each one would have just made me feel more and more cathartic.
He was sacked 7 times.
That's great.
The Niners, who had – it was almost an exact reversal. The Bears gained almost exactly 200 yards more than the Niners, which was a flip from the last time. The Niners passed for more yards, but Joe Montana only passed for 116 yards after take sack. Best for 170, but he was sacked 7 times.
The team had 116, right, the team had 116
yards passing. The sacks were by Richard Dent had 2, Dave Duerson had 1, Wilbur Marshall had 2, Steve McMichael had 1, and Otis Wilson had 1.
More of that, please. That's so satisfying. That's all right. So if you live through the events of January, just imagine how cathartic that was to that all afternoon. And the Bears were doing it, and you expected them to do it, but they still did it. And there was not much drama in this game, but it was so, like, you watched it like it was a tense game. For
the Bears were 13-0 after one. They got up to 16-0. Carlton Williamson had a 43-yard interception return.
And McMahon played, right? Yeah.
Yes.
He did play. Because I remember, it's like, even though he didn't have a great game, it's like, see? This is what he...
Yeah, we would have won.
Now we got a real quarterback, right? It was like, this is the... And it's true, right? I mean, at the time, if you put yourself in that time, that's what you're thinking, because McMahon was, when healthy, a real quarterback, even if he didn't really stand out in that game.
The Niners did cut it to 16-10 with 49 seconds to go before halftime. Nobody scored in the third, and then Kevin Butler kicked a field goal, and Walter Payton had the second of two touchdown runs and put the Bears up 26-10, and that was it. Payton ran 24 times for 132 yards, two touchdowns. That would have been during those 11 consecutive 100-yard games that he had. in his, what, third to last season in the NFL.
Right, which I always kind of feel like his reward was that he was able to rack up 1,500 yards a lot more easily than he had to rack it up, you know, say, in 1980. Because they had blockers and they had leads, right? Like, he, you know, they had a passing game for such as it was, at least relative to their history.
So Ditka gets his revenge.
Gets his own garbage time opportunity.
So now did the fridge didn't play fullback. He didn't unveil him until the Packers. He didn't get to play.
No, he carried both times in the Niners game. And then when it kind of became a little bit of a story and people would see him in practice, he was strictly a blocking back, and I think somebody asked
right.
that
you're about right. it. Two carries for 4 yards.
Yeah, because I remember, like,
rushing than Dennis Gentry and Thomas Sanders combined.
I remember, even though I was only 13, I did not smoke, but I probably would have been enjoying a cigarette if I had at this point when the game was in hand, and it was, like, so satisfying. And then I remember, like, glancing at the TV, and even, I don't know, this may not have still have been a Summer All Madden game. I feel like it might not have been. Just glancing at the TV, and you just see, like, this white blur, you know, like getting a handoff and going, not a blur, but like this larger than normally noticeable. Right. Well, it stood out. And like, wait, who is that? Who's that running back? And the announcers, I think, even missed it. It would have had to have been Madden Summer when I think about it. By the way, if this game is out there, I got to tell you, like,
Hank Stram. Look at that fat guy matriculating the ball down the field. Jack.
I mean, you're right. It was a 16-10 game before the Bears scored the ball. I feel like if you were to graph it or watch this game, that the whole fourth quarter is probably where Montana started getting dropped. Like, when the Bears had the lead and it was getting towards the end, I just feel, that they would just snuff. They just snuffed him out. It just and that was the feeling all around. But yeah, so to cap it off, Ditka gets to. And like you say, almost a polar opposite of the championship game. Team switching sides, but Ditka gets to rub it into Walsh, the old man, as he would call him later. And that's that, right? You would think. But like I said, I think maybe reporters asked him about it. Somehow it became a little bit of a thing. And then Ditka started, I think when asked about it, would just say, well, look, he's an athletic guy, which he was for a large guy, even though Perry was one of only like five players in the entire league that were 300 pounds. I mean, this was almost like a paradigm shift ago. But he was athletic. He was fat. He could have been more athletic if he maybe shed pounds, but he was still young. And so they, you know, and I think Ditka also had, you know, he had a fly in his hair about Buddy Ryan too, kind of dissing the fridge and wouldn't play him either. I don't know if Ditka was that, you know, thinking that advance, but that was kind of, you know, so kind of another thing.
It was a curious draft pick in that defensive tackle was not exactly a need for those Bears.
Right, McMichael and Hampton was moving back inside when, you know, they had Dett Hartenstein was still good.
Yeah.
Jim Osborne was on the 84, but he was getting old, but
so
yeah.
Perry was the 22nd overall pick. He was picked six picks behind a fairly good player who went on to play for the Niners.
In 84, Jerry Rice, right.
But if you're like, all right, well, the Bears could have picked up somebody more useful than William Perry, somebody more crucial to their needs than William Perry. It's a little rough after him. Jesse Hester for the Raiders, does he do it for you?
Jesse Hester. Wait.
How about Steve Sewell for the
Wait.
Broncos?
You're saying that the Niners drafted Rice before the Bears drafted Perry, right?
Yeah, six picks before. It was not the Bears did not pass up Jerry Rice to get William Perry.
That's surprising to me. That's surprising that the Niners would pick it higher than the Bears, but yeah, that would be an all time, like, what if the Bears had passed on Rice?
Oh, I'm pretty sure, and I'm pulling this out of my ass, that the Niners had to trade up.
Yeah,
obviously they did because they went to Super Bowl. They traded up. And well, apparently Walsh was shitting his pants because he was trying to get even higher because he wanted Jerry Rice so bad. And there were other good receivers in the draft. And I'm sure all the draft geniuses were like, what's going with the kid from the, you know,
Mississippi Valley State. Yes.
Let's see. Wide receivers drafted ahead of him were Al Toon.
Wisconsin. We talked about Al Toon as you went to the Illinois Wisconsin game, and
he was a very good player. Right. Al Toon. I was a small child. I didn't. They kept putting that up on the video board, and I was like, "What the fuck is an Al Toon?" I thought it was one word. So there were three. There were three wide receivers that everybody had at the top of their list, and they had Al Toon, Eddie Brown, who the Bengals drafted.
Jerry Rice.
And Joel Walsh, not the guy from the Eagles. Or the guy who drove my bus when I was a kid, in the school bus.
All right. Might be the same guy I was thinking of.
It would be him, actually. Steve Walsh wanted Jerry really, really bad and was petrified that someone was going to take him. I wonder who picked right before. Let's see. Passed up with one pick to go. The Kansas City Chiefs drafted tight end Ethan Horton.
Uh-huh.
15th, wow. And then Jerry Rice went 16th.
You know, it's the butterfly effect. You don't know if Rice would have been great elsewhere. It was a perfect team for him. I always feel like Montana made Rice and Rice made Young. I mean, they work together. I don't know. You can't. Montana himself was a third-round pick. You know, Rice was out of an underrated school. I mean, these things aren't always as easy to draw up as you'd like to think.
My point was going to be maybe the Bears shouldn't have taken Perry. Maybe they should have. But looking at the guys drafted after him.
Jesse Hester. Yeah.
Jesse Hester. Trevor Maddich.
They got nothing.
The next really good player drafted after Perry, you have to go all the way down to the second round, 37th pick, Randall Cunningham.
Okay. So took him a little bit.
The Bears did fine.
That's a shitty draft. That's all. Like the 86 NBA draft.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't call it a shitty draft. It was a top-heavy draft.
Well, Jerry Rice is a Hall of Famer, and Al Toon was a great player.
There are three Hall of Famers drafted in the first round.
Oh,
Bruce Smith,
right.
Chris Dolman, and Jerry Rice. Bill Frelick, who was a very good player for a long time, went second. Ray Childers was also a good player for a long time. Former Bear. For like a week.
I don't remember Ray Childers at the Bears.
Yeah, I do. Good old number
the
74.
Defensive back?
No, a tackle.
Who am I thinking of?
Am I right? No, maybe not.
We're thinking about Robert Childers.
I thought Ray Childers suited up for like a few weeks for the Bears. Lomas Brown.
Okay, Detroit lineman, right?
Ken Rutgers, red ass from the Packers.
Packers, but they sucked.
Jim Lachey.
He was with them.
Was a good offensive line draft.
Actually, right. Bears didn't need offensive linemen in 85. They were okay.
No, they were busy adding Tom Thayer.
Right, they had Kurt Becker on the bench.
So, anyway, it's a long way around to say that wasted draft pick, but he was full of shit. Perry was probably the best value you could get at the
time. All right. And on their way to their one and only Super Bowl championship, the Bears absolutely had the Niners' skull on a stick.
So the Bears win. They're celebrating. They get on the plane. There's booze is flowing.
Someone has a little too much Pinot Grigio or maybe Pinot Noir.
Ditka gets a DUI on the way home from the airport.
So I think we talked about this last year, but it was on one of our replays, and I'll just quickly retell it because we were only in eighth grade in 1985, but, you know, jokes like this even make the junior high rounds. And Ditka, on his way from O'Hare to, I believe he lived next door to right around Ron Santo in Bannockburn. I could be wrong.
Phil
somewhere
Jackson
up there.
Also,
there you go. That's where all the coaches live. Pulled over, a little gloom, vroom, 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 you know, glug, glug, vroom, vroom. And it made the news right away. And coincidentally enough, around this time, and it was news because it was kind of rare, but it would be a much more commonplace. It would be ubiquitous, in fact, in the future. But the Bears did not have too many Monday night games in general before 1985. Teams were not guaranteed a primetime game. You only played at noon, at 3, and on Monday night. Bears would go years without being on Monday night. Bears were very they were on in 84 in San Diego, but they're playing now in 85, probably the first Monday night game, I'm guessing, in 3 or 4 years in Chicago. They're good. Fans are excited. The Bears have just beaten the Niners 5-0, and the city's worried about hooliganism. And they announced that that alcohol sales will stop at halftime of the Bears game, which is, of course, is pretty common now. It's kind of standard policy, but it was people met with some outrage. But then the joke, of course, made the rounds because Mike Ditka had gotten popped on Monday that Ditka could have all the beer after the game.
All right, so I got a couple of questions for you then. The 84 Sunday night or Monday night game, was that the Bobby Duckworth game?
San Diego Chargers, right?
Was that
Rusty Lish
game against the Bears where he dropped the ball before he got to the end zone?
I think so. I think you're right. That was Bobby Duckworth. Okay.
And then the second is, okay, so the Bears go 6-0 with the win in San Francisco. If Ditka gets pulled over even a month later, is there any chance in the world he actually gets a DUI? Super Bowl shuffle Bears.
Yeah.
Actually, that was like 13, right? But they had become a phenomenon by then. And he was when they went into San Francisco, he was Mike Ditka. About a month later, he was the coach, and he would be the coach.
That's it. That's
forever.
A good point.
And
that's
I just probably... have a feeling that they would have still pulled him over, but one of the cops would have just said, "Mike, you want to scoot over?" And he would have driven him home, and the other cop would have followed. And
you got anything in the glove compartment? Is it got a little snifter or flask?
There's no way that it. Okay. Certainly 1986, Mike Ditka does not get a DUI.
I like this theory though that was when you just you may possibly have sort of isolated the actual point where he had morphed from Mike Ditka, borderline Hall of Fame tight end, and to the coach. Absolutely.
Yeah, up until then, he was the red ass former player who had a perm and would just scream at people on the sidelines. Now he never stopped. He got rid of the perm. He never stopped screaming at guys on the sidelines. But the success. He bathed himself in the success, and he became untouchable.
Right, right. He basically, the Allegheny, Pennsylvania-born Ditka, came to Chicago to just assume, without question, the legacy that native Chicago and Dick Butkus, I guess, had walked away from when he moved to Los Angeles. But like Ditka became that guy, the embodiment and everything else. And he did not hesitate in relishing in it.
And it was not without some merit. He was a legitimate Hall of Fame player.
He was either him or John Mackey.
Yeah. One of them was the greatest tight end of all time for a very
of their
long
time. Game. Yeah. Yep. 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 You're right. Yeah. That deserves some acknowledgement.
The Bear fans had been starved now going on 21 years, 22 without a championship. And the year before we had been teased with a chance to play for the Super Bowl. So we were ready. We were ready to anoint Ditka, and it took
100%.
The San Francisco win went a long way towards legitimizing the Bears and him.
That's true. Yeah, you got to shove it up Bill Walsh's hiney, and then that germ of an idea evolves now that he sees down the line he's still Mike Ditka at this point because he's got this personal grudge about Forrest Gregg. Going on. He's like, hey, that Walsh guy, he's a little bit of a blowhard and I got him, but boy, it'd really be nice to stick it to this asshole.
Yeah, I'd like to say that Ditka was settling all family business. It was all his. It wasn't the family business.
And
it was
like,
all Mike Ditka business.
It was his family and it was and William with the refrigerator period was his goddamn tool. And then it became something else after the Green Bay. But going into Green Bay, that was, Ditka thought it was funny. I think we thought it was funny. Ditka was, on the war path. And so, I know that, when the Bears played the Packers this year, we replayed an episode from last year and, we should get back on the horse again, but there are games out there. The Monday night game does exist and it is, I haven't really looked at it from beginning to end, but it's just comical. you know, what takes place. And this all happens in the midst of the Bears' only championship season. But they go into the nationally televised game against the still shitty Packers. God knows why the network felt like it was that was justified, because even we didn't really appreciate any kind of Bears-Packers history, because neither of the teams had both been relevant at the same time for, you know, 25 goddamn years. But nevertheless, there it is on the national stage. Mike Ditka with the guy that he had bug up his ass about across on the opposite sideline, Forrest Gregg. The game itself wasn't really much in doubt. I think it was 23-7. I think the Bears got a safety, which was not unusual. But on the first and third touchdowns, Peyton scored, but Perry just completely cleaned out the Packers, the poor unsuspecting Packer linebacker George Cumbie. And Peyton could just, like, you know, just walk into the end zone. But then, of course, the real moment was those two scores bookended the time, to everybody's surprise. Even though Perry did carry the ball in San Fran, and it was being discussed because reporters, I think, sniffed it out, and it was he's a blocking back. He's a good blocking back. He's athletic. He clears a fucking hole for Peyton. And it was true, because if you watch the first and third touchdown, you and I, like, could be holding hands, like, at arm's length and walk through that hole. But it was the second one where Ditka got clever. And, you know, it's one thing to give the ball to the lineman at midfield at the end of the game. It's another to be, like, with the second or third quarter in a relatively close game on the goal line, to give the ball to your oversized lineman who just plows into the end zone for a touchdown and then wobbles his way up to his 2 feet and spikes the ball. It's just nuts. And it took off from there. We're talking about the Niners, so we can touch upon those other, you know, fridge, the caught a pad. We talked about it before, in fact, and it never gets old for me. I don't know, you know, for people listening. But, it started with the Niners game, and then Ditka carries it to the Green Bay game. And then the next day, it's all about Fridge is getting calls from Late Night with David Letterman and, you know, the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson and endorsement deals. And he became he just superseded everybody. He was probably like maybe the eighth best player on their defense, but he did eventually. Buddy Ryan relented about halfway through the season. I think Hartenstein may have gotten hurt, or, you know, Hartenstein was getting kind of old, but Buddy did in fact swallow his pride or whatever and started putting Perry in, and he goddamn was effective, because wow, he was 20. He might have been big, but he was 22.
Yeah, and, you know, you can only play Henry Wachter so much.
Well, but so Hartenstein, I think, got hurt, right? So necessitated.
Yes.
Poor Mike Hartenstein.
So they don't play in 86. They do play in 87 in the strike year,
which, and I referenced.
It did not go well.
It didn't. And it was kind of like this was like the I might not have known at the time, but where there was this annual pattern, the Bears would get off to their 5-2 start, and then they would go 2-4 in December and limp into the playoffs. And twice in 5 years, like I said earlier, when I jumped the gun on the 85 game, they go into a Monday night game in San Fran and just get humiliated. I mean, come on, they go
to nothing.
They go into the game, they're 2-10-2 teams. How often does that happen?
So think about, we're coming off of a Bear game where they played the defending Super Bowl champion, Tampa Bay Bucks, and they lost 38-3. Is that right? That was the score, right? 38-3.
Yeah, it was.
And that was a complete boat race. Just imagine the feeling had the Bears gone into that game 10-2. Because that's exactly what happened to the 87 Bears. They were rolling this
there big is,
and they got their ass handed to them.
There was home field advantage considerations, man. This is what you live for, right? As a fan, it's on Monday night. The whole country gets to watch it. And of course, the Bears don't have McMahon, so they're a little bit of a disadvantage there. And yeah, I don't know. I don't remember why. I remember it happening. I can't remember a single moment other than the fact that it happened.
Well, the Bears fired 41-0. All their guns. Both Mike Tomczak and Jim Harbaugh played in this one. Actually,
Jim Harbaugh was a rookie.
So what do you which team do you think had a better quarterback tandem in this game? The Bears played Mike Tomczak and
I'm looking at it.
Jim Harbaugh, and the 49ers played Joe Montana and Steve Young.
Hey, can we have Steve Young? We'll trade you Jim Harbaugh.
Wow.
We have a Hall of Fame quarterback on the bench. Could we borrow him? Our quarterback's hurt.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Yeah, that's outclassed.
I mean, talk about... Because we've lived in this hell now since, what, 1992?
Yeah, let's say early 90s. Let's say 20, 30 years now.
The handoff in Green Bay from... They get a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yeah, 92, 92,
then they
94.
Just hand it to another Hall of Fame quarterback. Well, the Niners did the exact same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
From one Hall of Fame quarterback to another.
Except at least the Niners got multiple Super Bowls. Yeah. At least
well, the
not
Niners
a one.
Did a much better job. And it's ironically because while Favre was an ultimate Iron Man and Rodgers has not missed a whole lot of games, he's missed a few.
Right.
Both Joe and Steve had serious concussion problems.
They missed chunks. Joe missed chunks to his arm.
By Jim Burt once.
Right, right. His arm like
it basically ended his career in San Francisco.
He did come back, but
that was about the time when Wall started thinking, we've got to move on to the guy we stole from Tampa.
Yeah. And it worked. It worked. And then Walsh was gone by the time Young was really there, but
George Seifert
was able to vulture the last two of their five Super Bowls from that era. Walsh only won three. He didn't win all four of those ones in the 80s that Montana won.
So I don't know if Young started this game. He threw 19 passes. Montana only threw 8. Maybe it was simply a matter of Joe didn't need to. Steve Young started the game because
they give a winning
pass to Jerry Rice in the first quarter.
Yeah, okay. And they do give quarterback wins, I think, if you were to look them up. But, yeah, who knows? Walsh was still the coach. He quit after the next season. So this was the season, of course, in which, in spite of all of the evidence that this game produced, that maybe the Bears are a paper tiger, right? The Bears, you'll recall, did the Niners, I think, had the number one seed, and they got shocked at home to the Vikings. And Anthony Carter and Chris Carter, and it was the Bears that had a home game against the Redskins for the second consecutive year. And this time we had McMahon, and we're like, all right, wow, Vikings beat the Niners. All you got to do is beat the Redskins at home, and then you get the Vikings at home.
Yep.
And shame on us because you lose 41-0 to San Fran in December. Get the fuck out of here. In retrospect, I would not allow myself to subscribe to that thinking at the time, and I didn't. Because, you know, we're still sort of in the afterglow of the Super Bowl, too. So we don't really have any sort of, you know, a lot of cause for cynicism.
Yeah, we're still, yeah, it's one we're bad still game. In the afterglow of that Super Bowl.
All right.
That's all we'll have. We hang on to it like a flotation device.
Okay. But then a little bit of redemption when the Bears play the Niners the next season. Like maybe there's still a little bit of roar left, yeah, right?
Was, is this the 10-9 game? Monday night game?
It was. And this is when Richard Dent did something.
I remember that. I remember the picture on the Tribune where he was he leapt over, I don't know who it was.
That's it.
Was it a running back trying to block him? And he basically jumped over him and sacked Montana with like one arm as he was falling to the ground.
That's it. That's you and I thought of the exact same thing, and there are probably thousands of Chicagoans that if they're as obsessive as we are and followed as close as we are, that's probably the first thing that comes to mind in the 88 game. And it was, you know, the Niners would win the Super Bowl that year. As we know, because actually they would face each other again in Soldier Field 3 months later. So I guess that euphoria was short-lived.
The Bears won that game 10-9. They had a 10. Yep. They had a 10-7 lead, and then there was a safety,
which is why they got drama. probably why they got to host the championship game, right?
And so then that championship game is famous. It's the most famous thing because it was the bear weather.
It should have put an end to the notion of bear weather forever and always.
It was
colder than
hell, and those sissies from San Francisco were coming out, and they were going to freeze to death, and the Bears were going to kick their ass.
Yep.
And
yep. The term bear weather should never have been used
Niners.
After this. Right. After this game, that term should never have been used, but of course it still does. And yes, going into the game, Bears 12-5, they had the same record. So the Bears winning that game gave them the home field. So that you think in the stars are lined up. Bears are in their third championship game, 4, 5, 6, and 5 seasons. So I, this kind of slams the door of like that specific sort of goal. I mean, that's impressive. You make 3 title games in 5 years. Yeah, you lose 2 of them to San Francisco, home and home. But it kind of, that was kind of it. The Niners slammed the door on that, really, because I know the Bears the next year missed the playoffs and then had a couple more, but it was, this was kind of it. And all I can say is fuck Bill Walsh and the San Francisco 49ers. God damn it. 28-3 in Soldier Field. What was the temperature that day? Is it 20 degrees? So, you know, cold, but
I'm
whatever.
Sure it was a wind chill. 2 Bears had sacks, and one of them I would have forgotten was still around. Steve McMichael and Al Harris.
Oh, Al Harris was on the 88 Bears. He hadn't, like, gone and joined Buddy Ryan with the Eagles yet.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure he was there the next year.
Like Todd Bell did.
He played for the Eagles, right? Al did. I think he did.
Yeah, he did. They both did, I'm pretty sure. Buddy was happy to take him. So the Niners then went on to win their 3rd Super Bowl after they beat the Bears in Soldier Field in January. And that was Walsh's last. He was replaced by Seifert. And then the Niners become the first team since Terry Bradshaw's Steelers in 10 years to repeat as champions. And then by then, their paths kind of diverged, right? So there are a couple more games I think we should get to. I think we could probably jump to the next final playoff.
You don't want to relive the 26-0 loss in 99 or the 52-14 loss in 1991?
Only to say the 52 was sort of a still like the last wisp of that Ditka era, what I already described as teams that would get off the big starts and fade December. That was the 2nd of the 2 games of the 5 years in which a playoff-bound Bears team went into Candlestick in December and got humiliated. So we just went over the 87 game with Tom, Zach, and Harbaugh, and then they come in. And this was a chance. The Bears needed this game. This was the last game of the season. If they win the game, they win the division, they get a bye. And there's fat old Wayne Fonts farting up his Barca lounger in Southfield, Michigan, and eventually smoking a cigar when the Bears, he probably lit that fucker at halftime. But what I remember about this game is that at the very end, Young was the quarterback. Montana was injured. He was about to be gone. I don't think he'd play for them again, but he was still technically a 49er. Bill Musgrave, he a future offensive coordinator, right?
Yes.
Still in the league. He got in the game, and he threw a touchdown pass for the 51st point of the game, and then they kicked the extra point. And so this just kind of brings the whole Mike Ditka, red-ass Bill Walsh thing full circle. But Walsh was gone. I remember this is George Seifert, who I believe was sort of a right-hand man of Walsh's, I think, for the most part. He kind of just ascended to that role after Walsh. He was kind of hand-picked or whatever. Ditka was such a red-ass after this game in 1991 that he was asked about that extra touchdown, and he just said, you stick around, what goes around comes around. You tell him that. Yeah, the old man knows that. Bill Walsh was still living rent-free in Ditka's head because he's like, I taught the old man that or something like that. And the old man was obviously a reference, kind of a disrespectful reference to Walsh. Like
The 4th quarter was quite a thing in this game. It was 24-7 going into the 4th quarter.
Oh, so there's still a chance?
No, but the Niners must have been knocking on the door because they scored a touchdown 5 seconds into the quarter, Steve Young.
At the end of the 3rd, okay. The
Bears drove down to the 1. I got to see who fumbled here.
Was it Johnny Bailey? Was it,
somebody fumbled, Don Griffin returned it 99 yards.
Son
I'm going to guess
a
it
bit.
Was Harbaugh just because he's an asshole. He fumbled.
Right.
Then Harry Sidney scored on a 2-yard run, but then the Bears, this is probably what set up the final touchdown, 6:44 to go. The Bears were still throwing. It was 45-7, but Tom Waddle caught an 11-yard touchdown pass. Who do you think he caught it from?
I just looked. I wish I had.
One of my all-time favorites. Tom Willis.
PT Willis, baby, Florida State.
So that was that was fun.
Yeah, then
the Bears now would not go back for 4 years, but when they did,
playoffs again.
It was Wani in the playoffs. The Bears had won Is it still? Let me think. It's yes, still. Wani has still won the last road playoff game in Bear history.
Correct. Correct. Lovey never actually coached in one, and neither actually has anybody. They haven't actually played. Is this possible? They have not played until last year, obviously. They played New Orleans last year. But prior to New Orleans, this
was... Jerron never had a chance.
One and done. So the last ever game in Old Soldier Field. Wannstedt coached both on the road, and Lovey's were all at home. And Trestman and the Navy's first was
1-1.
Right, both on the road. And the last victory still. Yeah, the last victory still, the Vikings, last road victory. But it was the last time the Bears played on a road playoff game, which says more about the Bears since 1994.
So we did the whole – I think we're right about this, right? There's only three coaches in Bear history that have won road playoff games.
I think – well, Hallis, obviously, with him.
Mike Ditka, and Dave Wannstedt.
And Dave Wannstedt.
There's quite a troika. That and 100-year-old franchise. And Dave Wannstedt. The two greatest coaches in Bear history and Dave Wannstedt.
Well, so Wani was on the sidelines for the third and to this point in time final playoff match between the Bears. The Bears never were able to exact revenge on the Niners in the playoffs. They only exacted revenge on that blood-pulping regular season game in 85. But nevertheless, do you have a we talked about this game briefly, I think, randomly in the past.
Yeah, I have a memory of it.
It's Mark Carrier. Sean Gale, that's
Sean
it.
Sean Gale, late hitting DeJohn Taylor.
No, it was Steve Young, I think.
Oh, that's right, because Young runs in, and then Gale nails him a good 4 seconds into the end zone.
The second thing I remember was Jim Flanagan caught. No, they only scored. Is that the right? No,
they
what was the
15
final
point somehow?
Yeah, Jim Flanagan caught like either a 2-point conversion. They may not have had the 2-point conversion by 1994.
Oh, Flanagan caught a touchdown.
Okay, Which, you know, we just talked about how, you know, out of a playoff game in San Francisco, Mike Ditka got the idea to use William Refrigerator Perry, which became this old commercial success. Well, Dave Wannstedt sees Jim Flanagan catch a touchdown against the Niners and thinks it's a good idea to keep doing that until that fateful night in Denver when they had a chance to win in 1996, and our guy dropped the ball. But
yeah, the Bears led 3-0 in this game. And then not long after that, it was 37-3. Flanagan caught a touchdown pass, and they to cut it to 37-9. And Wani went for two. The pass failed. Lewis Tillman scored the last touchdown of the game, the last points for anybody. Bears went for two again. I'd like to see that chart. Okay, it's 9 minutes left in the game. We're down 44-15. I think we need to go for two. Yeah, we do. We got to get the 2 points right now.
If ever there was a more an obvious barrier between like the first tier of teams and the second tier that season, it was like that was just Cowboys and Niners, and like I think the Bears, the Lions, and the Packers and the Vikings all made the playoffs. And it was just this weak-ass sister division where you had Dallas and San Fran and the other two divisions. And you almost felt – I remember feeling it going in, like, there's really no chance.
And
like,
even if you include the AFC, it basically was like the Niners and Cowboys were playing a different sport.
Yeah, because then they went on to get – yeah, they got to face the Chargers.
Wasn't it the Bills? It was always the Bills. Wasn't it the
– Well, it was post-Bills. This is the first Super Bowl in 5 years that did not include the Bills.
Stan Humphries then.
Stan Humphries, yeah, right. Good. So I remember just going in was like, boy, the Niners are really good. Let's hope they don't play really, really well from the beginning. And they pretty much did. Like, oh, here's William Floyd. Was he like the rookie big fullback that year? Yeah. I think. And it was like, oh my God, make it. It was like that Simpsons meme. Just like, please make it stop. He's not even here. He's already dead. And that was our last playoff game for 7 years.
So the Bears and Niners have played in the playoffs 3 times.
And the Niners won the Super Bowl.
Of those three games. Is 108-18. Is that bad?
36-6. Average score for 3 games. Wow. Yeah. Whatever, San Fran. Is the next game, unless there's one that jumps... ahead, I feel like 2000.
There's going to be one in between. There's a game in 2000. The Niners win 17-0.
That game.
You don't remember that game? Or you do remember that game?
No, I do. But go ahead.
well, then there's a little more memorable game the next year.
You're right. But real quick, 2000, I think I just have to note it. But that was Cade McNown's second season.
Oh, good.
Going into the game. It was all the hype was, it was Jerry Rice's last game at Candlestick Park. He was leaving. It was an open thing. And he wasn't retiring because he would show up for the Raiders in the Super Bowl 2 years later. But Terrell Owens turned out to steal the show from Jerry Rice by catching 20 passes, an NFL record. But still, to me, the thing that stands out the most in this game is not the fact that it was Jerry Rice's last game at Candlestick or the fact that T.O. set an NFL mark with 20 receptions, but it was the fact that the Bears offense never once crossed midfield in the entire game. And it was pretty much the rock bottom from Cade McNown. I think that was the game where, like, he gets knocked down and, like, three of his linemen just kind of walk right past him. Nobody offers to pull him off.
The Bears got outgained 456 to 104. Cade was 9 of 29 for 73 yards. He averaged 2.5 yards an attempt. He only threw one interception, though, and he was only sacked twice. The Bears sacked Jeff Garcia 4 times. So, ha.
All right. In your face, Garcia.
James Allen led the Bears in rushing, 16 carries for 31 yards.
But surprisingly, I don't even know.
Jerry Rice's last game, he 7 catches for 76 yards, and they held Terrell Owens to 20 receptions for 283 yards and a touchdown.
Wow. Yep. The Niners are generally good. Of course, they have not won a Super Bowl since the year that they beat the Bears in 94. They've been there twice. They haven't been out of the rotation for more than like 5-6 years at a time. And I don't know where they ended up in 2000, but in 2001, they were still pretty good. And that was when they came.
One last fun fact of the 2000 game that I just saw here. The Bears had 8 first downs. Terrell Owens had 16.
Wow. Terrell Owens had twice as many first downs as the entire Bears offense.
Real low point.
And everyone should have been gone, but then 2001, as we've discussed, especially because we talked about the second of these when we covered the Browns, but 2001 was a magical season. It was not maybe a legitimately great team, but
it was fun.
We were getting starved, right? It was like the 98
like we
Cubs.
We were smart enough to know that they weren't. This was kind of the they were kind of the 98 Cubs.
Yeah, I just said that. Yeah,
oh,
right.
Did you just say that? Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it just kind of came to me. Because, like, at that point, it had been 7 years.
I was counting Terrell Owens' first downs, and I missed that.
Hey, you can save that for when you have to go to sleep. You'll it's like counting sheep. But they know that it was the longest time in between playoff appearances. We'd gone 7 years, man. We were getting fucking thirsty. And we had this, like, second year bald big linebacker. We had some hope. I don't know however they did it, but yeah, it was a fun season, and it really sort of left its mark in the consecutive weeks, the first of which in which they played the nine around this time. It was mid-October, and the Niners, I think, were pretty good. I think Mariucci was still their coach.
Yeah,
but
both teams were 4-1 going into the game.
Okay. Yeah. So we don't know what we got with the Bears. So it's already rarefied air, I think, because we've been so dragged down with Wannstedt early, Jaron, just doldrums. That 4-1 team itself was probably hadn't occurred in a while. But the Bears fall behind pretty big, pretty early. Giants are, who's the Michigan? Julius Peterson. Was he the Michigan State guy?
Julian Peterson ran a fumble return for a touchdown.
That's right. I was driving back from Michigan when this all this was going
14-0
on.
After one. Then Brandon Jennings, it says, fumbled out of bounds in the end zone. He must have come close to actually recovering it, but because the Bears got the safety, so it was 14.
Okay, I'm. Thank God for that safety.
But then the Niners scored. Damon Shelton. Caught a 3-yard pass from Shane
Bears. Number good old number 31.
Yeah, didn't remember him. 14-9.
Yeah.
Then pretty Garrison serious, Hurst man. Caught a 60-yard pass. Zach Bronson ran a Shane Matthews interception back 97 yards. So it's 28-9 in the third quarter. The A-train, Anthony Thomas, cut it to 28-16. But then Jose Cortez made a field goal to make it 31-16.
And that was. Yeah, that was where it was. 31-16. Okay, because I thought they needed 2 two-point conversions, but apparently there was only one. All right, that's fine. But they needed 2 scores.
They did, but they were lucky because they had just the man for the job.
The wide out from Michigan. This is basically the David Terrell game, if you need to really, you know, in some context, because the guy did absolutely nothing pretty much the entire season except for catch the last 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, he caught a 13-yarder with 10:52, with 4:08 left in the game. And then he caught a 4-yarder with 26 seconds to go. Anthony Thomas converted the 2-pointer. And
I remember that. He barely cleared the line. I remember watching it.
He went to overtime. Where one play into the overtime, Brian Urlacher scared the shit out of Terrell Owens.
That's right.
On a tipped pass, Terrell decided, nope, I'm not going for that. Mike Brown caught it instead and ran it 33 yards for a walk-off touchdown.
Fun fact, until that time, the shortest overtime in history had occurred in the Pontiac Silverdome. Thanksgiving Day, 1980, when Bears backup running back Dave Williams returned the overtime kickoff. What'd I say? Dave Williams. Yeah, he returned the overtime kickoff. That was the fastest overtime in NFL history. I want to say, I'm sure this could be verifiable because it happened 20 years ago and people still talk about it, but I believe this overtime was maybe 1 second faster. Although I'm looking at it, it says 14:44, 16 seconds. So the clock doesn't start until I thought they said that this game was they beat Williams by a second, but that would mean that Williams's play took 15 seconds, which I suppose is possible.
Wasn't that fast, but still,
But anyhow, so there was that sort of dovetailing with history. But yeah, thrilling. Thrilling come from behind victory. Bears are 5-1, and then they fall even more desperately behind the next week against Cleveland, and the same thing happens. Mike Brown fucking gets another deflected pass and walks it off for the second consecutive week. And I was just thinking of that randomly this week, and just even though I probably think about it a lot because it's freaky to begin with, and even like this week when I thought about that happening, how just absolutely nuts that is. But, you know, these were not the San Francisco 49ers of Joe Montana. Terrell Owens made a pretty good villain, and so I love the fact that Terrell got a little bit of alligator arms on that pass over the middle from Garcia that he didn't want to get hit by Urlacher, like you said.
So the Brown was there. Neither of them are the shortest anymore.
Wow.
Get a time on this. There's another story about it. They keep going on and on about Dave Williams and shortest overtime. Okay. 21 seconds.
21 seconds.
Right. So then this one would have been 16 seconds, but then the Steelers. Oh, shit. Okay, so Dave Williams took 21 seconds to run a 90-yard. Oh, he must have done a lot of weaving. Although I don't know, you're right. It could be maybe the clock used to start on the kick, not on the. Now
I don't know. I wasn't implying that. I didn't think that was the case.
Seems like a long time to run that far.
No, anyway, he was slow.
So
that
was the shortest. Then there was the. Then there was Mike Brown at 16
seconds. Eclipsed it.
But that has since been broken.
By who?
I misread this. At first, I thought because it starts with. It was the Steelers and the Broncos, and it starts with Roethlisberger. But he was sacked on the final play of regulation. The first play of overtime was, of course, Tim Tebow.
Jesus Christ. And you know what? None of that
yards
shit would have.
Demaryius Thomas. That happened just like, what, 2 weeks after
Marion Barber ran out of bounds?
Marion Barber Jr. the third.
As Drew Madgery said, you fucking Tebow enablists, you know, by doing that, you enabled him. And that's what Marion Barber did. And that's what so all that could have been prevented. That Tebow, that Mike Brown's record would have been safe.
Yep.
Had Marion Barber not needlessly and stupidly gone out of bounds.
That was a playoff game, right?
It was.
Yeah.
So the fastest overtime ever is actually in a playoff game.
And then I think the thing I remember about it was Ryan Clark was like the best defensive back for the Steelers that year. Couldn't play in the game because he has sickle cell anemia, and it really affected him. Like, he could get seriously ill at altitude, so he could never go to Denver and play. So he's not on the field for that entire game. And Tebow, of course, had a terrible game, except for the one lucky pass to Demaryius Thomas.
Kind of like Shane Matthews against the Browns the week after the Bears beat the Niners in 2001.
Hey, Shane
I'm hoping
the alley-oop to James Allen, although it got tipped in the air and caught by James Allen.
Yes. I'm hoping we could at least do quick hits, because off the top of my head, I know that they met in 2003, which was Dick Duran's last year, but it was on opening day, and it was the day after Randall Simon hit a home run in Milwaukee on his return after getting arrested. But that was when the Bears also got blown out in San Francisco. Cordell Stewart had made his debut with the Bears, and that was the beginning of the end for Duran, 2003.
You consider this a blowout? It was only 49-7.
Oh, I'm sorry. Compared to some of those Monday night pantsings, maybe not. And then 2004, I can often, without even looking it up, Sunday night, Craig Krenzel, my friends, stunned the 49ers. I don't know if the 49ers were any good in 04, but that was part of the absolutely mystifying three-game winning streak engineered by Craig Krenzel in 2004. It was 5, Nathan Vasher returning was it a field goal or just a punt? Did he do a field goal the year before Hester did in 06? I think so. I was at this game, and it was windier than fuck, even for the lakefront.
Yeah.
And
108-yard missed field goal return.
Yeah. That was at 2005, right? Not the year they went to
Super Bowl. Joe Nedney tried a long field goal as time expired in the second quarter.
Pretty awesome that happened for the Bears 2 years in a row. but Vasher did it first. I think Hester tied – it may have set a mark then. I know it was beaten about 10 years ago by Baltimore or somebody. But anyway, so I remember that game, and I remember how windy it was. They did not face in the Bears Super Bowl season, and then I'm pretty much running out of Bears-Niners games off the top of my head.
They played in 06.
Was that – so it was Ken Dorsey,
the
right?
Bears put it on him.
Yeah.
41-10.
I'm pretty sure Ken Dorsey was the I was at that game too, I think. Was the Niners quarterback.
Rex Grossman, so, 23 of 29 for 252 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Excellent. That was good, Rex.
Alex Smith was the quarterback for the Niners.
Oh, my bad. My bad. Okay. Dorsey may have been the quarterback in 05, or who knows. I don't care that much about Ken Dorsey. But it's weird. They played him quite a bit there for not being a divisional foe.
Yeah, they played him 3 years in a row, and the Bears won all 3. Oh, they played him 4 years in a row.
Yeah, 3, 4, 5, 6, and actually 6 out of 7, 2000. Bears kind of owned them a little bit there, kind of closing the gap, or I don't know. It's been pretty even because it looks like the Niners have won, I don't know, 4 out of the last 7. It's been an oddly even series in spite of the butthurt that we have from the 80s.
The Bears have actually won 3 of the last 5.
Well, I heard you and Mike inadvertently head down, remember this crap, when you talked about Jimmy Garoppolo's first game. And you came around because at first you mentioned that the Niners kicker had like 6 kicks. It turned
only
out to
five.
Be 5.
Only had
but
5.
But you didn't mention until the second time around that it was Robbie Gould. Because I remember I was listening, going, it's Robbie Gould that kicked those. You came around there. I remember that. They play what? Did they play last in 2018? Has the Bears playoff season?
Yep, it was the second to last regular season game for the Bears. For both, I guess. And Robbie Gould kicked 2 field goals to put the Niners up 6-0. But Anthony Miller caught a touchdown pass from Mitch, and Jordan Howard put the Bears ahead in the third, and they won 14-9. I don't remember that game at all.
I don't either. I think we're old because we can just pull the
Nick
shit out.
Nick Mullins
from the 80s.
Played for the Niners. Jimmy was hurt. Go figure. Jimmy's oft hurt.
Indeed. Yeah, Mitch was 25 at 29.
Yeah. 246. Touchdown, no picks.
Yeah, I'm looking like to see if anything might trigger a specific memory. Obviously, the Bears, had they already won the division? Were they playing for anything down the stretch? It's pretty fucking sad that we can't even readily recall.
The Bears had clinched the playoffs about the week before when they beat Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, that's right.
For the one time that they've done it in forever.
Yeah, kind of a forgettable game, though.
Joe Philbin was coaching the Packers because Mike McCarthy had already been fired.
Yeah.
I had inadvertently, back when I used to keep, every once in a while I would check to see how Matt Nagy was doing against teams that were over 500. And for the first couple times they did it, I inadvertently credited him with a win over a 500 team because it was the Packers. They weren't.
Right.
Right. He's now 6-21 with the Bears against teams over 500.
Make it stop. It's too. I'm having
Mitch was slinging it around the park that night, though. He completed passes to Allen Robinson, Trey Burton, Taylor Gabriel, Anthony Miller, Jordan Howard, Taco Mizell, Ben Broniker, Josh Bellamy,
wow,
Tariq Cohen, and Adam Shaheen. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 Bears caught passes.
Woo. Wow. Yeah.
And they scored 14 points. Matt Nagy special.
That's right. Whether it's, yeah, the low-scoring affairs or the games in which you lose but manage to finish close, although he's kind of losing that this year. Remember, you pointed out before the Matt Nagy cover where a lot of games they were outclassed but only lost by like 5 or 6. He's kind of getting away from that, I think, the last few weeks this year at least. So not a concern.
Who is who's the all-time leading passer in Niners history?
Is it not Montana? Is it?
It's John Brody. No, it's
John. I was going to say John Brody.
It's John Montana.
35. Oh, because bad because John Brody would give me a chance to ask, do you know who John Brody's son-in-law is? Or do you know who has John Brody for a father-in-law?
Oh, shit. You're going to kick myself as soon as you tell me.
Yep.
It's not a football player, right?
It is. You're getting confused with Patrick Manley, whose father-in-law is Tommy John, maybe.
Not confused with that.
But Chris Chandler's father-in-law is John Brody. John Brody actually was also a PGA golfer, which he had to be a really fucking good golfer to make the tour after he played, but he was. Anyway, so Montana is?
All-time leading receiver is Jerry Rice. That's pretty obvious.
Okay, so rusher.
We determined this. If you took Jerry Rice's three best seasons of his
how many 19, Johnny Morris's can you 19 stack?
19-year career, he would have been the Bears' all-time leading receiver in just 3 years. Who's their all-time leading rusher? This guy has come up before, and we're always dumbfounded.
Oh, the old guy, Frank Gore.
Frank Gore, 11,000.
I was going to say Garrison Hurst, but yeah, he just hung around. He got a lot of those.
Who is the winningest coach?
Okay, is that by percent? I want to actually guess George Seifert.
It is George Seifert. Because 98. Well, and 30.
Yeah, he got to enjoy like the peak of their, you know, Walsh, as we pointed out, when we started, Walsh went 2-14 in 79, as we discovered, we went into the O.J. Simpson-Walter Payton matchup. So Walsh had to take his lumps for a couple of years. Seifert inherited a team that was there. So
Their coaching history in since Seifert is pretty interesting. So Mariucci was there. And did
Mariucci after Stafford. Okay. Yeah, he took him to a title game in 97.
He was there 6 years.
Okay. Mike Nolan came after him?
They had one losing season. We had two losing seasons, but he got fired after going 10-6.
And then he went to Detroit, right? Yeah. And they just proved that Detroit sucks because, you know.
Then they had, for 2 years, Dennis Erickson.
Oh yeah,
he went 2-14 in the second year. He got fired. I believe
he was on the sidelines in that 2003 opening day thrashing. Would he not have been, or no?
In 2003.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thrashing does is good. It's fun to get a thrash. Then a guy who threw a fit because the NFL wouldn't let him wear a suit on the
Mike
sidelines.
Nolan, and whose dad coached them like 40 years or 30 years earlier. And
Dick wore a suit. He wanted to wear a suit.
Yeah.
Then the, Mike Nolan got fired and they had an interim coach.
Would it be anybody I would know? Like,
oh, it's somebody, you know,
Russ Francis, like an old 49er.
I'm not Dick Turan. The fifth greatest middle linebacker in Bear history, maybe fourth.
Oh, Singletary.
Mike Singletary. Can't win with him.
You're calling him an you're calling him an interim coach, but then he remained
took over
their coach.
In the 08 season. Then he got to coach.
You're just trying
he
to
got
make
to coach
me
in 09.
Right.
But then he had his own interim replacement in 2010. Because Singletary only coached one full year for them. He took over in 08, got fired during the season in 10.
Did they? And I believe that 09 team actually beat the Bears on a Thursday night, as bad as both teams were. It was Jay Cutler's first season. But anyway, Bears threw a lifeline. Yeah, I remember that. Cutler was terrible. The Bears gave a lifeline to Singletary. Cannot win with him.
Jim Tomsula. got to be interim coach after Singletary got fired.
Is he one of the guys that buried a football? Who am I thinking of? That was. He could have.
Then they had 4 years of Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, that's their little mini renaissance.
Went to two championship games.
Two NFC title games.
One in which
games, yeah.
Kenny Williams' kid kept fumbling punts.
Yeah, that's right. That's
then they
right.
lost the Super Bowl when the power went out, and he lost to his brother. That's then they right. lost another conference championship game. Then they went
and,
eight,
he, went to
eight, and he got fired, but he kind of quit. And that was the Colin Kaepernick. No, Colin started. Well, obviously, Colin was quarterback in the Super Bowl. The best
Harbaugh
thing about Colin started his career against the Bears. And humiliated them.
Yeah, it was his first start. Yeah, it was a week after the Bears lost to the Texans. And
but the thing that was more fun about that was he more than humiliated the Packers in the playoffs.
He beat them twice. Yeah, so Harbaugh.
200 yards in that game.
Right. Well, Harbaugh has a soft spot in my heart because he beat the Packers twice in the playoffs. So I have my issues with Jimmy, but I'll cut him some slack there.
Then they went back to Jim Tomsula. He got to coach a full season. Didn't go well. 5-11. And then do you remember this? Because I barely remember this. Chip Kelly.
Oh, yeah. From Oregon.
2016.
Yeah.
And
he was
fired after 1 year.
Yeah. Offensive mastermind.
They handed it over to Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah. And they're sort of, they look like they might be, I mean, they made the Super Bowl 2 years ago.
This Kyle, they're 2-4 as we speak. Kyle has had one winning season with the Niners.
And how many? Is this his third or fourth
this
season?
This is his fifth.
Oh, geez.
They went 13-3 in 2019, lost the Super Bowl. They were 6-10, 4-12, 6-10, and now 2-4.
Okay.
So there's a decent chance if they don't turn it around that he'll get fired. And if he does, the Bears ought to go over there and beg him
right.
to coach their quarterback.
But I heard you mention in your podcast with Mike how master planner Matt Nagy might realize, well, wait, if he wins, then my job is secure even though I'm losing.
Right. If they don't fire, if Kyle Shanahan doesn't get fired, maybe I won't get fired, so I should lose to Kyle Shanahan. That's the chess match going on in Matt Nagy's chrome dome.
I think we've all thing, at least as it pertains to Bears Niners. I hope we haven't forgotten anything, but
we didn't talk about Jim Hacksaw Reynolds.
No, cutting his car in half with a hacksaw, right? But that's not necessarily Bears Niners. The Niners actually did play in the first NFC championship game post-merger in 1970. They lost to the Cowboys, and then they disappeared because that decade was dominated by the Cowboys, Rams, and Vikings. But it's pretty much their history really starts with that Bill Walsh era, which kind of coincided with our own meager glory age. But nevertheless, there were some memorable games, both good and bad, that we were able to waste some time talking about here. And I'll never forget that 85 regular season game. Eat dirt, Montana.
We didn't talk about Ricky Waters.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't talk about how the Niners had a backfield that had also played together in college.
That was not the William Floyd, right? No. Was it Roger Craig? No.
Roger Craig and Tom Rathman both played at Nebraska. In fact, they both played fullback at Nebraska.
Wow. For Tom Osborne.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting.
Back when Nebraska was like the only team that actually gave the ball to the fullback. But, because Craig was a fullback originally, and Bill Walsh turned him into a halfback, and then the two of them played together.
Well, Craig was a big part of Walsh's transformation for that West Coast offense. When they went to the Super Bowl in 81, Earl Cooper was a rookie running back who set the NFL record for receptions by a running back. I only remember this because I had the Topps football card celebrating the moment. But Cooper was gone after a couple years after that Super Bowl, and Craig was really the guy. And he was. You got to give credit where it's due. Walsh was a pompous ass, but he saw inefficiencies that he exploited, and he evolved the offense to where running backs catching high percentage passes out of the backfield was a common ploy. And Roger Craig was like to his benefit statistically, he was like this odd anomaly. He's not a Hall of Famer. right? I'm sure he's not.
He's not.
Because he was not a great running back, but he was a really good offensive player because he gained a lot of yards rushing and receiving out of the backfield. He had to work a lot, I guess, is the point.
Well, let's look. Right, who more career? Well, he played longer, I was going to say. He basically was, in my mind, I feel like he was Matt Forte.
Oh, that's a good comp. God, I love see. Matt Forte.
He ran, rushed for 8,000 yards, and he caught passes for almost 5,000.
That's you know what? You could almost make a Hall of Fame. I'm surprised there hasn't been more clatter for him in the Hall of 13,000 combined yards for a running back.
How many did Matt Forte have? Because if you put Roger Craig in, you got to put Matt Forte in.
That's fine. If I take anything else away from this podcast.
For Matt Forte's.
Can't wait. Let's lower. I love Matt Forte, but I have a tough time being intellectually honest and advocating for him.
All right.
So is it close?
What do we say for Craig? We say Craig
8-5, about 13,000.
4,911 yards, and he caught passes for 8,189 yards. Matt Forte caught passes for, or rushed for 9,796 yards and caught passes for 4,672.
Oh, never mind.
So
sorry,
more
it's not
total yards.
All right. Sorry, Roger. I take it back. I don't want to. I love Matt Forte, but it's
and they played.
It's pretty damn good. 11, it earns its
one played
fucking
11
respect.
Years.
Craig played for a while.
Forte played 10, and Craig played 11.
Yeah. That's it's
honestly if Forte hadn't been dicking around with the Jets those last 2 years. He'd have been better. Well, he was done. When the Bears let him go, he was done.
Well, that's it. Okay, so now I have a frame of reference. So, very good career by Roger Craig. Well, Jerry Rice did, of course, was just fucking ridiculous. And then, you know, especially, you know, you want to talk about the biggest variance between receivers. We know we have the lowest all-time receiving holder for a guy that hasn't played for over 50 years. And Rice obviously has to be the highest for any franchise. So, yeah, think about that. Chew on that, kids. Consider the state of the Bears. There's probably at least a 20,000-yard difference between our all-time leading receivers, right?
Got to tell you, it seems pretty obvious that the next all-time leading receiver in Bears history is not on this roster.
Incredible. So Johnny's going to get another another 3 to 5 years, right? Because it's not going to be Allen. Allen might have had an outside shot.
It's never
going to
be Darnell Mooney. So
probably not, because it's 5,000. You know, not at his current level of production. Yeah, Rice was 22,000, so four times. So roughly four times as many, not five. Geez, sorry, I didn't mean to exaggerate. Four times as many. Yeah, so that thing will have at least five more years. Johnny Morris will be to that ground.
Johnny is going to die as the all-time leading receiver.
He will. He probably will.
Congratulations, Johnny. And you can live a long life still, and you're still going to die as the all-time leading receiver in Bear history.
Right, because he's Johnny's got to be mid-set. He can live to 80. Well, he came up in, like, I want to say around with Ditka. He came up like 59 or 60. So I think he's a couple years older than Ditka.
Well, if Ditka's.
He came in at 58.
Rivers,
yes,
see the
I know.
Bet Rivers promo Ditka does. Ditka's.
Yeah. I think Johnny took care of himself a little bit better than Iron Mike, frankly. In fact, he is 86. He's born in 35. And I think Ditka was born in 39. They're both in their 80s. But, yeah, so basically, if Johnny's still alive, maybe, you know, if whatever, even if the Bears get a receiver next year who breaks his all-time franchise mark for receiving yards in 5 years, and if he's still alive, they could maybe get a Cushman to drive 91-year-old Johnny Morris out to congratulate
my prediction
that person.
Is the next Bear to be the all-time leading receiver is playing games in Arlington Heights.
Coincidentally enough.
They're going to have to drive Johnny to Arlington Heights for that ceremony.
Yeah.
In a hearse.
It's not going to happen. Yeah, the Algrim Funeral Home is just down the road. So yeah. That's a good way to finish. Jerry Rice and Johnny Morris. There's your comp. That's the state of the game.
All right. So next week,
Bears we move on
Steelers.
From the team of the '80s to the team of the '70s. So Yeah, we'll bring some stuff out there.
A special guest, Bill Cowher, is going to come on.
Oh, man, you're already getting my blood boiling, Andy.
I'll tell you all about what it takes to be a Hall of Fame coach.
Yeah, win one goddamn Super Bowl somehow.
The most ridiculous thing
ever
that he's in.
I can't wait to dive in on it.
All right, well, we'll worry about that next week then.
Sounds good. See ya.
Many of us have herpes.